next case is 98-23-83, State Teachers Retirement Board versus the West Geauga Local School District Board of Education.
Explaining how they did that. A, regarding the Catholic school, B, that West Geauga retained the right to hire and fire those people. Otherwise, it's facts of the same. They're the same anthem that will take you to the Catholic school. I'm not sure if that per se is in the record. I believe the stipulation is the same. Did have the contract. I can check that in the record. Yes, same bond. There is a Catholic school as opposed to a non-traditional school, and they perform the same service. When I say that these two people, by the way, were teachers, I mean, the stipulation, in every sense of the word, they were teachers. And in fact, take a step further and look into actually what they were doing. They were doing things like meeting with parents after school, teaching track, timing, racing events. They were traditional teachers in every sense of the word. Hockey treatments. Hockey had a free ride for 10 years. I was paying for kids to send to private school 5 minutes from my house. That can't be great. I mean, if you look at the technical definition of teachers that the trial court did, the court of appeals did, I lose. I would have to stand up for that. But it can't be the law. It just can't be. In the classic scenario, you could say, and that's what happened here, West Georgia could just say to all those teachers, sorry, you know, I didn't know you didn't have a certificate. You're not getting retirement benefits. Well, if you look at the exhibits attached to the stipulation, why did West Georgia honking him on a little bottom line what certificates these people held? Why is it even relevant? These people were just some independent service providers teaching down the street. Who cared if they were certified K-12? That was on the invoices originally, on each of the invoices that was submitted to West Georgia. Secondly, how common is this kind of work? Was this kind of one time in terms of the expenditure that was going to be I'm not going to represent that I had answered with the stipulation. I represent that there is a letter in the file from the Attorney General's office early on advising West Geauga. Every school that we found out did this has agreed to pay. You're the only one that hasn't. I mean, it must have been a problem because they were paid.
So there were some other schools.
There were some other schools in West Geauga. It's not a matter of stipulation, but in the record, there is evidence that West Geauga was the only school that didn't comply when requested to do so. Now, there were guidelines that were issued by the Board of Education, and they were after the fact. I mean, everything's after the fact in this case. My client was named as a defendant in the trial court. After they asked the Attorney General to get them their SDRS documents, we were named as a defendant, and now I guess we're the only appellant, per se. The trial court ruled against SCRS trying to get the benefits. I'm a defendant, I'm still a talent. And I'm seeing your argument 11 years after the fact. My clients are entitled to benefits. But for the fact that West Georgia didn't do the paper trail, no one would question they'd be entitled to benefits. I mean, these funds were state funds. Nobody could question
it. Mr. Minister, you argued that they were teachers, and teachers are teachers in the generic sense. We understand that. But the statute seems to say that there has to be, certain things have to happen for teachers to be teachers in the sense that they're employed by a school district. I guess I wonder what, I think I understand you said that you don't have to comply with 33-1908. That's not significant that there was no contract for teaching here. What if we hold for you in that point of law, what implication does that have for other cases? And that's a fairly important point.
I think unless the court wants to disrupt the law, the court's in a difficult position. If the court agrees with me, it could have further implications for collective bargaining issues, for all these other issues of the case that you're going to hear in about 2 minutes that say you have to have the cross the T's and dot the I's. This case is very peculiar on its fact.
The cross the T's and dotting the I's is a little bit, this statute's a little bit more than that. It says you have to have a contract. That's more than, you know, having every word in the contract correct, isn't it? That's fairly basic.
I guess it depends on what the definition of contract is. My clients had their hours on a piece of paper, their duties, their responsibilities, their rate of pay. That piece of paper was submitted to the West Georgia Treasurer. Based upon that piece of paper, the West Georgia Treasurer issued a check out of state funds to pay my clients.
superintendent tie contract, that's your...
No, it's a written contract, that's not a 33-1908 technical contract.
Well, it appears that a written contract isn't absolutely necessary as long as the Board of Education adopts a resolution employing these people.
Well, as the Appalachians will point out to this Court, there wasn't a resolution.
I know there wasn't.
There's the approval of the payments to them.
There wasn't in this case, but I'm saying that you're saying that paying retirement benefits could be avoided by not giving the contracts, but normally the Board of Education would at least adopt a resolution and inform teachers and so that a protection, so that scenario that you have given us could probably never happen.
No.
But in this case, we don't even have a resolution.
No, we have stipulation that the Board approved all the payments to the teachers, and they approved it out of a very specific fund, not kind of a general fund, they approved them out of a very specific fund, state funds, to provide these types of services. And the statute which authorizes that distinguishes between textbooks, buses, and these types of services. And it doesn't make any sense. I mean, if you look at the fact that Miller did have a teaching certificate, Connell did not, but she had all the qualifications for her. And in fact, the records show after she left the employment of West Georgia, they hired her, the county hired her. They stayed at Rockford. They did the same things. The county hired her. The county would help with SDRS. And the county would help their contributions.
Counselor, I have two questions. First is, this you identify this as a non-public chartered school. That's clearly different than the charter schools we know about today that have been created recently by the General Assembly, is it not? Are they? Okay. Do you have any knowledge of whether or not in the charter schools that have been formed by the General Assembly within the last 3 or 4 years that they have contracts, even though they're charter schools? Okay. My second question is, did we straighten out the procedural, who's on whose side, when we started this? Because when I look at the state's brief, they identify themselves and they're identified on our sheet as appellants, and yet, well, they're identified as appellees themselves, and yet they ask for a reversal of the decision and an order to pay. Is he going to argue, or where are they?
He's not going to argue. He could argue as an appellant, pursuant to the last order. It's procedurally difficult because my clients wrote to the Attorney General to get us our benefits. The Attorney General sued my clients to try to get those benefits. And in many respects, the SDRS and my clients were aligned all the way up to today.
Sued your clients so they could get the benefits?
Named them as defendants.
But also named the school board.
Named the school board, and Hawking came into this because they saw this case and said, uh-oh, if it goes the wrong way, I guess it's going to pay in the end.
It's a declaratory judgment.
Yes, but it was also...
They named them.
All right, so they...
also seeking my clients' contributions over the years, if the court ruled that these contributions were over.
The conclusion of the state brief is, for all the foregoing reasons, the decision of the lower court should be reversed, and writ of mandamus should issue.
Correct.
That's your position, too.
Hopefully, yes. That's what will happen.
No, it's not what will happen, and that's not what I'm talking about. That's your position.
Yes, it is.
And that the state seems to line up with that position on the basis of, what's their argument, because they didn't really go into it on the written contract issue.
The state's argument is the same as my argument. Our arguments are identical. The state probably has a little more interest in the argument that since SDRS decided these people were teachers, they actually have been given due deference by the trial court and the Board of Appeals, which is a separate argument that I haven't had the time to address. I see my time's about to expire.
So in other words, the state feels like if there's a requirement in the statute that there has to be a written contract, that the practice of this constitutes that.
Yes, and okay. In particular facts in this case, the court need not be concerned with disrupting Among my cases, we talked about the importance of those requirements. This is a very unusual factual case. It can be limited to the facts of this case. PRS purposes, the public policy weighs in favor of our clients in the sense that you've got to look beyond the technical requirements of the statute, what transpired here, and see what these people did. What they did was everything was within their control. West Yaga and Hoffman, not my client's control. As a result of their actions, there's no contract.
Well, your clients had a little role to the extent that they went along with having Social Security deducted from their pay and no ERS for.
I looked at the record, I'm still trying to find that answer, number one. And number two, there's a letter my client wrote to Hogan early on, long before she came to Mata, and said, I want my benefits. She says in her letter that told me you have a husband, you don't need them. And I know a lot of stuff that transpired in this case that is outrageous. And the most outrageous thing is only my clients not getting their SCR benefits.
Thank you. No, the red light was on, as you know, the rules. That's your 15 minutes. You're getting 30 seconds, rather. More than 13. You get 30 seconds. So be prepared. Mr. Trenson.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, Mr. Chief Justice, lawyer, members of the Supreme Court. My name is Jonathan Trenson. I'm Assistant Judge of the Prosecutor. I'm here this morning on behalf of the athlete of West Yaga Local Schools. Your Honor, at this time I'd like to reserve 7 minutes for Mr. Medina, who is seated in the district of Hoffman High School. Your Honor, it's our position that the judgment of the appellate court should be affirmed because it's supported by controlling statutory and case law. Your Honor, the central issue in this case, as I've been mentioning before, is not whether the appellants were teachers in this case, but whether they were teachers as defined by revised code 3307.01b for purposes of SCRS membership. Your Honor, in order to be a teacher under that statute, the individual must be employed by the public in the public schools of the state.
Is the preposition in important? That it's physically located? Is that what in means in that statute, in the public schools? I mean, two words are important, employed. But is in also important?
I think it is relevant. I think that both of those words are
important. It doesn't say by.
It says in the public schools.
They were sure in the school.
No,
Your Honor,
they were in the public school, the private school, not in the public school. So if you want to focus on that, it's not a word that would be helpful for the constitution. So that's how it's correct.
The other interesting statutory language here is with regard to the argument that the board should be given deference. And the language, I think, of the statute says, in all cases of doubt. Is this a case of doubt?
I don't think it's a case of doubt because, number one, one of the requirements is the employment requirement. Number two, the other requirement is that the teacher is employed under the contract as described in the last 319. And there is no such contract. There is no such employment relationship.
How can the STRS, with all its expertise, be so far off that it's not even a case of doubt?
But the statute says more than that. It says, in the cases of doubt, the board shall determine if there's a teacher, and its decision shall be final. What does this decision shall be final mean?
Well, Your Honor, I think that if the board's decision can be set to be based on some evidence, then the decision of the board couldn't be reversed, except if there was a case of abuse of discretion in deciding the case by the board. And what the Court of Appeals decided is that there was an abuse of discretion because there was absolutely no evidence to support either of those two elements I just mentioned about.
Well, isn't it fair to say that in all cases of doubt, as the statute says, there had to be doubt here because... Is it fair to say that there could be doubt here because the board comes down one way and you all come down the other?
Well, I suppose from experience, even if there's some possible lingering doubt, But I think the issue is whether or not the decision is based on some evidence. And I go to that this court standard in determining whether a decision has abuse of discretion standard.
So if there's no doubt about one of the four criteria, because there isn't any evidence to support the fact that there was a contract or that they, you know, on the were employed, I suppose you could say there's doubt. Maybe can't say there's doubt about in. No doubt they were not in the public school, depending on the importance we want to give that. But you say where there's no evidence, then the doubt, the in the case of doubt is the only time that it's final. Well, that's where you don't get into a case of doubt, where there's no.
Whereas I think that the evidence in this case is abundant. There was absolutely no evidence of a relationship. And law and state writers that the statute first word points without any further elaboration, then the law looks at that and addresses the common law and what the word means.
Counsel, the employment relationship is what would prevent the school board from doing the same thing with all of its own teachers. Is that correct? Or could every local school board decide? Maybe we don't like being, if they charge us too much, it'd be cheaper being in the social security system. So let's every time we hire a new teacher, make money in the contract.
Yes.
So they couldn't do this with their own teachers that are in their own school building because of all the other controls that the school board would have over those teachers. So that's what's critical in terms of the in and out system.
And in our case, there was no evidence of any kind of employment relationship. I mean, I'm looking at the
There's pay. There's pay, isn't there? Is pay pretty significant?
That's the only thing in this case. Everybody concedes that there was no control of the activities of the school outside of
But the argument, of course, on the other side is, how could they possibly be paid by West Geauga as if they weren't teachers for West Geauga? Auxiliary funds, under this scenario, under your view, auxiliary funds from the state are paid to private schools who pay teachers, their own teachers. But the only hang up there, of course, is the check. I take it goes from West Geauga to the teachers themselves.
But isn't this the, I'm sorry, finish your answer.
Okay, what I was going to say was that even though the checks did come from the shop to the accountants, West Geauga did not have the right to fire or hire these individuals that were hired by Hawk.
Well, this is a very typical way that the state distributes money to private schools, isn't it? Now, with transportation, it's the same thing, that rather than set up a separate bureaucracy in the Department of Education, they provide the funds to local school districts, and then they channel the money to the private school that's getting the benefit. That's what this statute seems to be doing. I guess your argument is that doesn't mean they're employed. The teachers are employed by the school district that distributes the funds to the private school. It's merely a method of getting the public money to the private school.
There is a recognition that the elements of 3307.01 were to be a teacher under the SGRI statute. They simply aren't there in this case. So the argument not enforceable as Judge Meyer, because there's no suggestion, there's no requirement in the statute that these remedial funds have to be given to people who are employees of the state. It just isn't in the statute. So that argument can't be made. And what I'm left with here is the fact that there seems no relationship or resolution by our lease. And I believe that was the reason why the Court of Appeals was correct in determining that the board's decision to the contrary, that these were teachers, is simply without any evidence to support, and was an abuse of the administrative discretion against the TRS.
Counsel, do you have any sense of how widespread this practice is?
About that, because the trial court made a real important finding, I think, that everybody knew what the situation was at the time, and it's my duty, he said, as I recall, that I have to enforce the contracts or the agreements between parties. What evidence is there, other than what you've talked about, the W-2s, what evidence is there that the teachers knew they weren't teachers? Say they must have known that. Is there anything that tells us that they knew that?
Thank you, Mr. Crimson.
Thank you.
Mr. Viviani. Mr. Viviani, let me start you with a question. I voted to allow this case, as you know, for review of the merits, but I thought there were some important legal issues here for us to decide. If I read the briefs and hearing oral argument, I'm not sure that I was correct. Is this an issue that needs to be decided? I mean, is this a fairly isolated case? It seems to me it may be a fairly isolated case of the facts.
I do not know, Your Honor. There is no evidence of record of how widespread this situation may be.
The only evidence in the record of other practices is the situation in St. Alphonso, which is another school in the district. In the state teacher retirement board brief, they made allegations that this is a widespread practice across the state. There's a statewide interest. But again, there's been no evidence of that. And I would assert that if there was a statewide interest, that the state teacher retirement board should have adopted an administrative code rule regarding this matter, which they have never done.
And we have no amicus brief from anyone suggesting that we should. Might think we would have on a case like this.
We do have knowledge from the record, though, do we not, that the Attorney General told the district that you're the only one not complying and therefore you ought to pay into the fund?
Well, the statement from the Attorney General's office is that in situations where the decision was raised, that the other schools agreed to make employer employee contributions to the system. That is not a legal resolution of whether, in fact, that was the proper outcome in those instances. And as this case demonstrates, this is factually based. I mean, the question of whether someone is an employee or not is based on the facts and circumstances. And we have no knowledge of what any of those other situations were. The only issue in this case is whether Pitano and Miller were employed by the West Georgia School District, and they were not. In the time remaining, I just want to make one point. It's another matter, I think, of public interest in this case is the level of deference that should be accorded to the state teacher retirement board in instances like this. I think the Mallory case from last year certainly points to them being able to, I'm sorry, Your Honor,
I'm sorry. You can finish your thought.
Points out that they should be able to look at other statutes, but I think it's important that when they are interpreting other statutes that are not within their realm, that they not be given deference, and that a court review in a de novo fashion any decision they make. This is a good example. This is an educational statute that they are relying on, not a retirement system statute. And I think that's a matter of public interest in this case. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Viviani. Mr. Matos, you use your time, if you may take 30 seconds.
Thank you. The letter I was referring to is Q14 in the records. The letter from the Attorney General setting forth their position that when this had happened in the past, every school district had complied. Secondly, if you look at the St. Anselm situation, it's the exact same situation. And public policy dictates that just because we have a church-affiliated school doesn't mean they should be entitled to SDRS, and my client should. The in and out of the school becomes irrelevant if you look at that situation. Those people were definitely out of West Georgia. They were a church-affiliated school off the premises. That wasn't in West Georgia. Finally, in terms of great public importance, I think anytime you talk about tax dollars being used for a private school, because the private school and public school decide set it up that way, it's an issue of great public importance and this court should address.
Let me ask you a question of the statutory interpretation. The point's been made that there's nothing, there's no express provision in the statute that says the teachers must be employees of the school district or public school teacher. General Assembly knows how to write that kind of language, and of course these statutes particularly are, there's a lot of interest paid to by interested groups when these statutes are written. Wouldn't we assume that if the General Assembly intended for the teachers to be employee of the public school district, that it would have said so?
I think another logical interpretation would be a little like we see different types of services to be provided in a month, like the self-care services in North Florida. Obviously, they didn't have the employees, but you need special skills to do that. I'm not sure anyone gave the thought that it wouldn't be people, especially when you look at the guidelines and the statutes that talk about it. Money is not used to pay the salaries, it goes to the workers' compensation fund. Yeah, for workers' compensation fund for non-employees, it makes no sense. And it talks about the excess going into workers' compensation. I don't think anyone ever thought they would do this, and nobody did do it except West Georgia. They were confronted with it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Schmidt. The case is submitted. You'll be advised for opinion. We'll take a 3 minutes.
All right.